If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. The new day that you're going to get this podcast on a Tuesday, because Finn and I are going to cover SmackDown from the previous Friday and Raw from the Monday, because we're trying to get used to a good schedule. But Finn is back from Norway. Finn, how are you?
I'm very well, Kenny. Very well indeed. It's good to be back. I had a very nice holiday, but it's sort of nice to be back to the reality of our pro wrestling fueled lives, if that makes any sense.
how difficult was it in October of 2019 to take a week off?
Well, I got back late Saturday night. Summer Sunday was spent watching wrestling. I was watching wrestling for about 9 hours yesterday. That was Monday. Watched about 4 hours of it this morning. I've still got loads to watch. Does that answer the question? Not easy at all.
Can you imagine how much time it would take you if you were still writing Power Slam?
Yeah.
Now, like, how much time it, like, so on average, what was a work week when you were doing Power Slam? Say it was like not a deadline week, but like the middle of the month for you. How many hours would you work?
I don't know, really. I mean, at least 60. I mean, you'd be in the office probably 55, 60 hours. And then when you weren't there, you were trying to fit the wrestling in. Some of it you'd watch at work, but a lot of it you would watch on TV. So, I mean, you know, there were times where it was just outrageous, the amount of hours I was working. But, you know, I don't want to go on about that so much, because there's nothing more boring than how many hours you work, especially when you're self-employed.
Because my question was going to be, do you think that if you were doing the magazine right now, that yes, you would be able to get away with doing as many hours as you did then, or do you think it would be impossible now, given how much you would need to watch?
I don't know. It's tough to say. You would have to find a way through it, and you would have to find a way of watching what you absolutely needed to watch at the times that you needed to watch it. I mean, the important thing is, even if you're not writing about something, you sort of need to be aware of what's going on there, just so you can have context. And You might want to make a comparison to it in an article or a news piece or something like that. So you've got to be aware of everything that's going on. And or at least maybe, yeah, you have to be. You've got to know what's going on. And there's some things that I haven't caught up on, as people will no doubt discover today as we're talking about various topics that we're going to be discussing. So, I mean, I read something on Sunday about Eric Bischoff losing his job with WWE, and I thought it was a parody story. I thought it was like kayfabe news. And then the next day I was like, oh no, he really has been fired already, or released already, or however you want to phrase it. I was like, wow, that didn't take long.
Were you surprised?
Well, I don't know whether I was, really. Probably not. Partly I was, because by this point, I would have thought that Eric Bischoff, at this stage of his life, he's not there to make waves. He understands how the system works. He obviously spent, was it 3 years in WWE, 2002-2005, I think it was, wasn't it? So he never really had any aspirations back then to work behind the scenes. He was just there as a on-screen performer. I think he really enjoyed his run there. I think he got on with most people. Well, obviously not Ric Flair at the time and certain others in the locker room, but he got on with most people in a managerial position. So I think by then he understood what was expected of him and was going along and really, you know, adhering to his brief as a performer and not having any aspirations to do anything else. This time he goes in as a backstage, as a head of SmackDown, involved in the creative department, the showrunner, whatever you want to call him. So I think going in there, he's obviously savvy of how the system works and what would be expected of him. And I would have thought that he would have found a way to slot into that. So I am a trifle surprised that he's been dumped already, because I thought Bischoff, I always viewed him as somebody who knew how to go along to get along. You know, he was the guy who did that in WCW, who did what Bill Watts couldn't do and really did what Kip Fry couldn't do. And, you know, was somebody that knew how to not play the system, but sort of blend into the system and make the system work for himself. So I'm kind of surprised that he wasn't able to do that in WWE, given his age and his wealth of knowledge and his understanding and his, you know, people skills, at least with people who are higher up the food chain than he is. So I am sort of surprised that he was ditched. What did you think, Kenny, when you heard the news?
I feel bad for him because I know Eric a little bit and I've worked with him before, and he's a nice guy, but it was always going to be Vince's show. And unless you're someone like Heyman, who is able to, I mean, Heyman's able to just kind of put his own fingerprints on everything, but Bischoff wasn't able to do that. I think he was too kind of out of touch of who people were and what was going on. And, I feel like he went back for like a legacy reason, and I don't think it worked out. So I don't really know what you do when you go back to wrestling to kind of almost rid people of the TNA stank that you had.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. But, you know, he's taken it with a sense of humour. I saw someone had posted a graphic saying 83 days with Eric Bischoff, and he reposted it saying, "Now that's some funny shit." And he's talked in his podcast about, you know, it just didn't work out and he wished it last longer, but, you know, he had a good time and he speaks very highly of them. So he's handled it in a really classy way. So, I mean, I can only imagine how I would be feeling if I were him. So, you know, I don't think there's any point in sort of kicking him while he's down kind of thing.
No, he definitely doesn't. There's no arrogance. There's certainly a lot of humility there, isn't there? That what happened, happened. Disappointed, but there's no hard feelings. You know, he's made a point of stating that he doesn't feel like he was thrown under the bus by Bruce Pritchard, who's his replacement. From what I understand, Bruce Pritchard has replaced him. I think So he's made a point of stressing that. And it all seems very amicable, at least on the surface. I mean, at this point in his life, I mean, I think he's independently wealthy. I don't think he needs to work. He seems to have a nice lifestyle. So there's really no point leaving and burying the people who've just sacked you, because one day you may return as a performer. There may be another chance to go back in another capacity. So he's handled it like a professional would. But I'm still sort of surprised that he didn't last longer and that he couldn't find a way of, you know, ingratiating himself with the people around him and certainly above him as well, to make this work. I mean, but he didn't, and that's that.
So I also wanted to ask you about, obviously, while you were away, weeks 2 and 3 of AEW and NXT happened, and week 2... AEW had 1.018 million viewers, while NXT had 791,000. And then week 3, AEW had 1.014 and NXT had 712,000. So AEW's managed to stay above the million. They've kind of been almost the same for weeks 2 and 3. NXT's continuing to kind of dip. What do you make of the numbers? And do you think it's a good sign that AEW is still over a million? Or do you think that you would be hoping they'd have more by now? What do you think of the Wednesday Night War numbers so far? And do they tell us anything, I guess?
I mean, obviously, AEW's lost about 400,000 viewers from the premiere on October 2nd. Wouldn't surprise me if the numbers dipped again this Wednesday. Because it didn't really seem like they set that much up for the October 23rd episode. How do you look at this, Kenny? I mean, when I was looking at these numbers, I was thinking to myself, well, when TNA was on Spike, a million viewers per week was seen as a fairly, you know, during the good times, you know, late 2000s, well, early 2010s were good times in a sense and bad times in another sense. But if they drew about a million viewers, that was viewed as a lousy number. That was viewed as a bad week. Now, can we compare AEW to TNA of a decade ago? Is that a fair comparison in television terms? Are fewer people watching now than were 10 years ago? Because now there's so many more entertainment options and so many other ways of watching programming. But I mean, if you go back, yeah, a decade ago, TNA, if that did 1 million viewers, they would say, well, that's a poor number. We need to get those numbers up. So that's one way of looking at it. Is that a fair way to look at it in 2019? I know when we were talking about the first week's numbers, or we were talking about this before the October 2nd AEW official launch on TV, we were saying that, you know, we were looking back to Nitro and Raw from 1995 and looking at the numbers then and how those numbers then grew in 96 and 97 and 1998. So the hope is that that will happen and that this is just them establishing the brand. I mean, AEW is still a new brand. I mean, the mass audience doesn't really know who or what AEW is. This is like a hardcore wrestling audience. So it's really hard to know how this is going to develop over the next 3 to 6 months or 9 months or next year, really. You know, because a lot of time with TNA, once they got on Spike, which I think was in 2005, I think they got on Spike, there was the hope was when they were doing about 1 million viewers that the numbers would continue to grow, and they never really did. I mean, I know they topped 2 million viewers for the famous January 4th, 2010 episode, but I mean, the numbers didn't really grow. They sort of reached 1 million, 1.3 million, 1.4 million on a really good week, but they never exceeded that. Will AEW from here, will it be able to grow? Will this brand get over? Will this have mass audience appeal, which is obviously what All Elite Wrestling wants? So it's hard to really know whether this is a good or a bad number. I'm sure a lot of people are expecting AEW to draw larger numbers than this. I certainly was, if you remember, before NXT made the move to USA. I was saying, well, they could do 2 million viewers for the debut premiere episode, which I think they actually would have done had NXT not been head-to-head on USA.
Yeah.
I mean, that first week, it was 891,000 viewers for NXT and 1.49 million viewers for AEW. So I think they would have topped 2 million had NXT not gone head-to-head. So I don't know. I don't know whether this is good or it isn't good. Obviously, they're beating NXT, but that's WWE's third brand. You know, my fear with AEW is, you know, what is their long-term plan? You know, are they going to be like TNA, stroke Impact Wrestling, where their spike in interest follows the defection from WWE of a big star, such as a Randy Orton, and then his debut on AEW? Will that be is that their long-term game plan, to pick up disgruntled ex-WWE stars and then push them and make stars out of them? Or do they think that the guys on the undercard can become ratings-drawing performers? So it's hard to know really what AEW's long-term plan is here. You know, if that all sounds fairly vague, you know, I apologise, but it's really difficult to know where it's all going to go for them. And I think it's too soon to really categorise it as a success, or I wouldn't call it a failure under any circumstances, because they're still above 1 million viewers. They've retained an audience. They can build on that, but I think they need a long-term plan in order to achieve growth. And I can't really see that yet. What do you think, Kenny?
Well, you know, I think that from the thing with AEW is they have week one, they had the 1.4, and they were always going to dip from that because you're never going to keep your debut number. But like they've had over 1 million in weeks two and three, but essentially the same.
Yeah.
And then week four, if week four is over 1 million, then I think they're fine. I think they're gonna be able to keep that up. I mean, NXT dropped 100,000 viewers from week one to week two, and then another 80,000 from week two to week three. So, yeah. You know, do they now plateau at over 700,000, or do they continue to dip? I will say this, and I think the NXT is a better wrestling show in terms of in-ring wrestling, but when you watch AEW, especially last week, I felt that there was more of an effort to try and create stars with Scorpio Sky and Darby Allin and people like that, and Rio. Whereas with NXT, it just feels like, it does feel a little bit like Triple H's indie fed. And it doesn't feel like, you know, for people who've watched NXT for a long time, it still kind of feels the same. And I don't know if you're, I feel like one of the things that's going against NXT is it is another kind of WWE show. So if you're watching like 5 hours already, do you really want to watch another two, or do you want to watch something different, you know? Yeah. It's like if you have a really nice steak two nights of the week, on the third night, do you want a steak or do you want a burger? Do you want to mix it up a little bit? And yeah. I think that that's something that's there. I mean, I've said for a while, I think the number that I'm really interested in is what number AEW do on the Wednesday after Full Gear, because that'll be coming out of a pay-per-view. Are people intrigued as to what the fallout's going to be from that?
Yeah.
So that's going to be pretty interesting. But I mean, you know, the other big rating that's going to be that we should talk about is SmackDown, which they had 3.89 or 3.88 million viewers for the first episode of SmackDown, and week two it went down to 2.89. So they lost 1 million viewers in week one, and then they lost another 400,000 week two to week three, which prompted the Bischoff firing. What do you make of those numbers?
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a collapse, 2.44 million on October 18th. I mean, it's not surprising if you think about it. I mean, this is what SmackDown was drawing before it went to Fox. I mean, Fox isn't in that many more homes than the USA Network. I mean, most people who want to watch wrestling would have the USA Network. If you're a WWE fan, you're going to have it, aren't you? So just because you're on a different channel and it's a broadcast TV, I mean, I know they have always been expecting more viewers than SmackDown was drawing on USA Network, but was it realistic that they would be able to achieve that? I mean, okay, there was the big launch, and from what I understand, Fox did a tremendous marketing campaign. I mean, remember back in, was it 2006, I believe it was, when Saturday night's main event returned, Kenny? Do you remember that?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And there was such a hoo-ha about that. Oh, this is going to be huge. WWE's back on network TV. And that first NBC special, that first Saturday night's main event, it was right before WrestleMania 22, it would have been.
Yeah, they had Steve Austin on the show.
Steve Austin on the show. I think it was in a beer drinking contest with John Bradshaw Layfield. They had like a, I think it was a ladder match with, was it Sean versus Shane McMahon? I think it was.
Yes.
It was a loaded show and it tanked in the ratings. And this was, we were talking over, what's that, 13 and a half years ago now? So there's loads more entertainment options now than there was 13 and a half years ago. So I think it's more difficult now to draw a number than it was back then. But there was this sort of belief that, just a fantasy, that going back on network TV would just introduce WWE to a whole new audience. Well, most people were aware that WWE existed anyway, and they already had tons of programming to watch each week. So, you know, and then the rating was just dreadful, and that whole NBC deal was like such an embarrassment that it just quietly sort of ended. No one really talked about it very much anymore. So with Fox, I mean, they did the great number on the first week, October 4th, but we all knew that wasn't going to last because they stacked it up. They promoted it really well, and it was always going to dip back down to where, to the same numbers that SmackDown was achieving each week when it was on USA. So I don't think anyone can really be surprised by this development. I mean, especially the draft episodes of Raw just felt so, I just felt a sort of emptiness watching them, because, you know, it's like, wow, we're pressing the reset button. And it's just these matches that didn't really matter, because in a sense, how can they? Because we're splitting the rosters again and we're setting these people off on different separate exclusive courses, apparently, which is what they said they were going to do back in April. And then they amalgamated the rosters in just a few weeks when the ratings went through the floor. So, I mean, I think this was inevitable. And firing Eric Bischoff over this is no solution to anything. I mean, Bruce Pritchard isn't going to really make any difference to this. I mean, I think they'll be able to get the numbers up marginally from here in time, certainly on go-home weeks and certainly on the weeks after a pay-per-view, if the storylines have been strong. But I think this is about what they're going to achieve. I think they're going to be, if they're hitting 2.5 million viewers, that's going to be a good week on Fox, in my opinion. I mean, well, you know, I don't see how anyone could really view it any differently. I think it's just unrealistic. It's just fantasy.
Well, you know, the thing that's, you know, it's funny you mention that is because a lot of people say to me, like, oh, have you seen Sons of Anarchy? Or you've asked me before, have you seen The Wire or whatever? And I'll go, well, I've not seen it yet because there's so much to watch, you know, and there's so much to see. Like, I've been watching, I'm really into like true crime. That kind of stuff really interests me. So there's a series on Netflix called Unbelievable, which is like a limited series, and it's got Toni Collette in it, and it's based on a true story about a serial rapist in America, and he would use like the system against, he would use the system against to kind of better himself. Like, so he would commit a crime in one town, and then he'd go to like another town, so that, you know, he would never be sort of, they would never link them because the towns don't share records. Anyway. But because that's like a limited series of 8 episodes, I can kind of commit my time to that. You know, it's not that long for me. Whereas like the idea of committing myself to like a 7-season show that's 1-hour episodes each, that's such a commitment to something new. And there's so many of them. But now wrestling is asking you, well, WWE is asking you to spend so much more time when there's so much more options to watch stuff, wrestling and non.
Yes.
So that's kind of part of the problem, because it's not like you're just being asked to watch Raw. I think if they just had Raw would probably do really well. But you know, you get Raw, you get SmackDown, you get NXT, you get 205 Live, you get NXT UK, you get the pay-per-views, you get the takeovers. There's so much stuff. Whereas, you know, I guess that's one thing that AEW, I hope that AEW, I mean, I know they've got the dark show that they do on YouTube and stuff, and you know, there are some issues because there is actually some good stuff on the dark show that they really should be recapping on Dynamite, and they're not doing that, which they should be doing. But, you know, if AEW is a show where you just have to watch 2 hours on a Wednesday and that's it, that's going to be quite an attractive thing to wrestling fans, because they don't have to, you can kind of get away with 2 hours a week without having to really screw up your social life or screw up your free time.
Yeah, that's it. And if you go on holiday for a week, you come back, you're like, oh, no. and the thing is, it's not oh, no, because it's not really that difficult sitting there and watching wrestling and then analysing it. I mean, this is a dream job for most people. So I'm not complaining that I have to watch a lot of wrestling, but you have to do it. You have to fit it in. And if you were to say like take 2 weeks off and come back, you'd be like, wow, how am I going to catch up on everything? And yeah, it's, you're right about AEW with the 2 hour show each week. It's a far easier to take that on than WWE. I mean, I suppose you don't have to watch NXT, and looking at the numbers, Kenny, obviously lots of people are skipping NXT because far more people are watching Raw and SmackDown than NXT each week. I mean, they may be watching it on the network and catch up with that at their leisure. They don't have to watch it on when it's on TV. And maybe that's another reason why the number is not as high as it could be, because people are like, well, I don't need to bother watching it. I can just watch it on the network advert-free, which is another thing I think we should need to consider.
That is another point. Sandra had brought that up as well. It's a good point. I mean, so, you know, the first post-draft SmackDown took place last Friday in Indianapolis, the October 18th episode. And I've got to say, I was sort of baffled at how uneventful the episode was. You know, this was going to be the SmackDown, the number one brand, and what we got, and I'm just going to go through it quite quickly before you kind of tell me what you think of this stuff. We had Reigns beat Nakamura by a DQ because Baron Corbin got involved. We had Chad Gable, who's now officially Shorty G, beating Curtis Axel. We had the New Day and the Heavy Machinery beat Ziggler and Roode in the Revival in an 8-man tag. We had The Miz doing a Miz TV with Bayley and Sasha. Nikki Cross won a women's title six-pack challenge thing. Braun Strowman squashed Drew Gulak. And then the main event was Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns beating Corbin and Nakamura. And I mean, is that to me just feels like same old SmackDown. It doesn't really feel like there's anything new there. It doesn't really feel like there's anything that's grabbing your attention. So I was quite underwhelmed by the episode. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it was probably the biggest story was probably the Miz TV episode with Bayley and Sasha Banks, and just that old familiar Miz saying, why? People need to know why. And Bayley sort of gave an answer, but they never really have an answer for the heel turn, Kenny, do they? Have you noticed that? We never really get an answer as to why someone's turned heel. It's like, for God's sake, can someone just come up with an answer so that next time someone turns heel, they can tell us why they did it. And they sort of put a little bit of a blame on the fans, but it wasn't really an answer, not a compelling answer. And as you say, then we had like a women's match to name Bayley's next challenger at Crown Jewel. I believe she's defending the belt, isn't she, Kenny?
I think she is. Oh, no, she's not. Sorry, I get the joke. Sorry, I was just so depressed about the heel turn that I forgot that Crown Jewel was in it. Anyway, yeah, sorry.
So, I mean, it's just. But you're right. Then Drew Gulak, who had been obviously cruiserweight champion, he'd lost the belt to Leo Rush on NXT. But Drew Gulak had been, by most measures, the biggest star on 205 Live, and Braun Strowman just hammered him. I mean, that really left me on a bit of a downer. And I'm not, as you know, I don't really watch 205 Live. I am a fan of Drew Gulak. I think he's a huge talent. And obviously Braun Strowman needs to be put over for this, the impending farce with Tyson Fury. But it's like, why not put someone other than Drew Gulak in there? Why not put someone expendable in there? Not Drew Gulak. He's somebody who's actually got somewhere. There's loads of talent that he could have crushed. And then, yeah, we had Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns defeating King Corbin and Shinsuke Nakamura. Bryan pinned Nakamura. Bryan and Reigns shook hands afterwards. And, yeah, it just all felt pretty samey, really. I mean, a lot of the problem, I think, is connected to this Crown Jewel event, because every time they do a Saudi show, we sort of all slip into this collective funk, don't we? Like, oh no, they're doing another Saudi show. And I think people would just be relieved when this is over. And then
you mean in 8 more years?
No, well, this will happen October 31st, then there won't be another till April. So we'll at least have sort of 5 or 6 months before they mention it again. But I think the Saudi shows are a big problem in terms of generating excitement, really, for anything, because we know what's going to – we've seen enough of the Saudi shows now that we know what to expect. And it's almost like this thing that people just want them to get it over with. And we know why they're doing it, because they're getting paid so much money. But I don't think they're really helpful towards making this a more vibrant – promotional, these brands more interesting. I think these really very much are an impediment to that. And, you know, I just dread to think what's going to happen at Crown Jewel, particularly in the Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins match. I mean, I'm just quite fearful of how that's going to end.
I mean, he's not going to win the title.
Surely not, no.
Sure. So, you know, if he's not going to win the title, why do we need to see them fight again?
Yeah, it's a good question. And they've set up this false count anyway match that cannot be stopped for any reason.
Now just the joke of the internet, which is that so the match can't be stopped for any reason. Pinfall, submission, it'll never end.
That's it. It's going to be longer than those Strangler Lewis matches, you know.
There was an ad on it because obviously Glasgow is supposed to get the Raw TV show, and now they've changed it to a house show, and now they've advertised, you know, Glasgow, there's going to be Seth Rollins versus Bray Wyatt in a steel cage, and all the comments are just like, won't they still be fighting in Saudi Arabia in a false never-end match?
Yeah, I think they should have checked the wording on that one. So,
maybe.
But yeah, I mean, if you look at Crown Jewel, I mean, there's really nothing on there that's inviting. I mean, do we know what's going to happen in this Fury Strowman match? Are they both putting the gloves on? Has that been explained yet? Have I missed something?
I think it's supposed to be a wrestling match.
Okay. Well, that makes it. I mean, that's even more worrying to me. I mean, hopefully it won't last very long. I can't imagine Fury is going to put himself in a position where he could potentially suffer an injury. So I reckon Braun will be taking the bumps here. But I'm not looking forward to that at all. I think that could it's not going to be the worst match of the year, but it could be up there as one of the worst matches of the year.
So, I mean, so that was SmackDown. I mean, so while we were talking, let's just, let me break down for you the SmackDown roster post-draft, and just let me know what you think of the roster. So we've got obviously the Universal Champion, WWE Champion, Brock Lesnar. We've got the Intercontinental Champion, Shinsuke Nakamura. We've got the SmackDown Women's Champion Bayley, SmackDown Tag Champions The Revival. And then we have on the SmackDown roster Alexa Bliss, Ali, Apollo Crews, The New Day, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, Braun Strowman, Carmella, Cesaro, Dana Brooke, Daniel Bryan, Ziggler and Rude, Elias, Ember Moon, Heath Slater, Kalisto, King Corbin, Lacey Evans, Luke Harper, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, Matt Hardy, Nikki Cross, Paige, Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn, who else? Shorty G, The Fiend Bray Wyatt, The Miz, and Heavy Machinery.
From your tone of voice, Kenny, you don't sound enthused or inspired by this lineup of talent, the way in which you read it out.
It just doesn't feel, I mean, to me, when you're thinking SmackDown's going to Fox, it's going to network TV, you want to put all the big guns. I mean, they put Bray Wyatt on there, who's one of the most popular characters. They've got Brock Lesnar, but I don't know, does something not feel missing? Is it just me?
Well, I mean, we're in a position, aren't we, where we had the Superstar Shake-Up, we're supposed to have brand exclusivity, then everything's integrated. So now we've apparently got brand exclusivity again. But because all these talent, I mean, a lot of these talent, and the whole idea of the brand extension, as we know, when it first happened in 2002, was that the stars would only appear on one show and then the company would have to make stars out of the lesser stars, out of the up-and-comers. That was the whole principle, the purpose of it. Apparently that was going to happen again in April, and then it didn't do when ratings went down. So we got Roman Reigns on both shows and all the stars were on both shows. So the people who hopefully one day will be stars didn't get a look in. I mean, a lot of those people whose names you read out, Kenny, they just haven't appeared on TV in weeks. I mean, when The Revival came out on last week's SmackDown for that 8-man match, they are the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, aren't they, Kenny?
They are, yeah.
When was the last time they did anything? I completely forgot that they were even the champs. I mean, that's how little TV time they were getting, because there was so much competition for television time from the stars who were on both brands. So we're in a position right now where WWE, you know, it's pressed the reset button, right? Everything changes. We're starting again. It's like Vince Russo in WCW. It's like, right, we're going to do this and these guys are going to get over and these people are going to get all the TV time and that's going to happen and this is going to happen. Well, they need to prove to me and to you and to everyone out there that they are actually going to try and make stars out of these people that have received little or in some cases no TV time at all. So you're right, it doesn't feel like they've got many stars because there's been such a dereliction of duty by WWE. In the process of making people into stars, did feel like there was an attempt on this week's Raw to do that with some of the performers. And this usually happens when reset buttons are pressed. There's this, you know, setting out the new stall. You know, it's a new day in WWE and things are going to change. And then ratings go down and normal service resumes. We've seen this many times, haven't we, Kenny?
We have. I mean, Raw this week did a better job than I think SmackDown did. Raw last night, as we record this, you know, they did a lot. You know, they had Drew McIntyre have the big return. Let's talk about the opening Ric Flair promo, Finn. What did you think of Ric Flair?
It was just mostly unintelligible. I mean, I found it excruciating. I thought it was one of the worst promos I've ever heard. And later on, he was interviewed at ringside by the Sarah Schreiber, I believe it was. I think it was Sarah Schreiber.
It was, yeah.
And she just looked shell-shocked by the ferocity of Rick's tirade. He was ranting out there, not making any sense. I mean, it's been very difficult to understand anything that Ric Flair has said for many, many years. But this was a new low for Rick. I mean, I don't think they should ever let him loose with a live mic again. I mean, it was just a disaster. What did you think, Kenny?
He did mention Saudi Arabia, which was, I don't think he was supposed to. It's hard because I feel like when you have Ric Flair, he does have a presence and he is a star, so I get why they use him, but I just don't know what you can do with him anymore. You know, he's too old to really do anything physical, and he doesn't look good. You know, he looks like he's, but then, you know, until they have new stars that actually are really over and are connecting with people, they're going to keep bringing back these old guys. Yeah. And it's going to keep happening, and it's an, you know, throughout the show they were trying to push new people, like Drew McIntyre obviously makes the big return, he's part of Team Flair, he has the really good match with Ricochet, we had the Street Profits in the main event getting the big win over the OC, you know, so they did, Andrade got a win over Sin Cara, Aleister Black got a win, they were giving people wins, and I felt like it was a necessary process to have to try and build people, but it just, to me, Raw didn't feel, in your words, Finn, Raw didn't feel like it had any pizzazz.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, it's like, there's two schools of thought, isn't it? It's like, if we don't give the new people a chance to get over, then they're not going to get over. It's that simple, you know? It's like, if you do what you've always done, then you'll get what you've always got. And that applies to wrestling and basically almost everything else in life, apart from maybe the lottery. You know, your numbers might come up. They won't. Well, they probably won't, but they might. So, I mean, on Raw, you are right. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of stars there, but that's because now we've apparently got this exclusive. Well, at the moment, we've got exclusivity. So there's not as many stars on each brand, which apparently is going to be this huge motivation for WWE to make stars out of these newcomers, which is something that they've been doing for years. And sort of occasionally they'll have a little success story, but generally they don't really sort of give up on people. I mean, I mean, this week's Raw, there were hits and misses there for sure. I mean, I enjoyed the Drew McIntyre versus Ricochet match as well. I mean, it was kind of noticeable that Drew wasn't really over. I mean, because people...
Well, I wonder why. Because he came in and then they just had him, you know, lose so uninspiringly to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. They had so many opportunities to build the guy. So, you know... Now, to me, it's their job to convince the people now that he's a star, because it's not on anybody else to have to prop up their bad booking, really.
I was just going to get to that, Kenny. I mean, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy that they caused us to lose faith in from the way in which he was presented. I mean, remember his feud with Cedric Alexander? Remember that?
Sadly, I do.
And it's just, what was the point of that? Because then they gave up on Cedric Alexander after this mini push. And this is the whole thing, the whole start, stop, or stop, start booking, whichever way around you want to call it. And they've done that so often in the past for so many years now, where they'll get behind somebody and then they'll give up on them. And it's like, well, they're back on the scrap heap. And when you get into that cycle of not having faith that in a certain performer, or not having faith in that the company will go all the way with a certain performer, it's very hard to get excited about the specific performer that WWE this week is telling us could be the next big thing, or a star of the future, or a future headliner. So there needs to be that consistency from WWE, absolutely, with Drew. And we all want to say, wow, you know, October 21st, 2019, Cleveland, Ohio, that was the day that everything changed for Drew McIntyre. That was the start of his journey to the title, very much like with Kofi back in February when the big push died, and then that led to WrestleMania. So we all want to believe that about Drew, but WWE has to prove to us that it is serious about carrying this thing through, you know. And to me, that means that Drew needs to be, you know, the guy who scores the pin, or last man standing, or the star of the Saudi show. Who knows if he will be? I mean, I don't have faith that he will be, because they've let us down so many times before we drew. So it's absolutely up to WWE to prove to us that it's serious this time about getting people over. And that means persevering for more than 3 weeks. But that, I mean, it was a really good start for Drew. I mean, Ricochet had a great match as well. But, you know, we'll see where it goes.
You do have to give them big props for putting over the Street Profits in the main event.
Yes.
I mean, I'm curious though, like, because they last week they hyped that there was going to be a six-man tag and Street Profits had a partner. And then it just ended up being a tag team match with AJ on the outside and Kevin Owens coming out at the end. So I didn't really understand when did it become... where did the breakdown come that it went from a six-man to a tag match? I didn't get that memo.
Well, I mean, you're splitting hairs there, Kenny, really. I mean, who cares? I mean, I don't care about that.
No, but the important thing... But WWE do this thing, and I think it is important in a way that they just advertise things and then just don't deliver them. And it's a varying degree of... The Undertaker did a promotional video for Crown Jewel. You remember last month?
Yeah. Where
he was all over... He's not on the show anymore. They advertised Austin and Undertaker for SmackDown on Fox. Neither of them were there or mentioned. They advertised a six-man tag main event for the show, and then when the show starts, it's all of a sudden a tag match with no mention of it. Like, when you do all that stuff, I mean, it might seem small, but it's like, it doesn't show a huge amount of respect to your audience that you continuously advertise different things and then just pull them with no real explanation.
Oh, no, as a package, you are absolutely right. I mean, I was just talking specifically about this main event. We had AJ Styles at ringside, so he wasn't an official participant in the match, but was involved to a degree. They changed the storyline to where Styles is at ringside, and then who's going to back up the Street Profits, and Kevin Owens comes out, stuns AJ Styles, so that will obviously lead to a feud between those two. Maybe they'll get it right this time, the Styles versus Owens feud.
Oh, do you remember that one back in 2017? Ouch.
I mean, that should have been... Fireworks should have been going off. You know, that should have been electric, and it... What a flop. I mean,
you couldn't find a sparkler, Finn.
That's it. That's it. I mean, it was like going to the cheap and cheerful end of the fireworks section, wasn't it? And then having damn matches. You know, I mean, that's the equivalent of the wrestling equivalent of that outcome, you know, on Bonfire Nights. So I don't really have a problem with what they did in the main event of Raw. I think maybe it was like, well, we need to put the emphasis here on the Street Profits, which is what they did. And they weren't really that over in the match at the beginning, but I thought they were as the match progressed. And I thought Angelo Hawkins's hot tag was, I thought that went down well. And then Montez Ford, he scored the pin on Anderson. I mean, obviously Ford's the guy that they see as a future star, possibly, you know, a Velveteen Dream or rock type, you know, charismatic figure. So I can see that in him. So I think it was more about, let's put the emphasis on the Street Profits and give them this big win in a tag match rather than it being a six-person match, because maybe more of the emphasis might have been on Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. So I don't really have a problem with what they did on Raw. But as for the other things you mentioned, yeah. I mean, you know, if you are going to advertise Steve Austin and The Undertaker, then they need to be there.
Yeah, and it just kind of feels like lately that's kind of been a thing that's happened fairly regularly, is things get advertised and then they just don't get delivered. I did want to ask you about last week, because we kind of missed this on our timeline of, you know, because you were away and stuff, but Seth Rollins burned down the Firefly Funhouse.
Yes, he did.
And we thought that was maybe going to be, there was rumours that was maybe going to be the end of the Firefly Funhouse. I don't think I've ever been happier to see a graphic for its return for this Friday on SmackDown. What do you make of this, you know, the booking of this? Because when Seth Rollins burned down the Firefly Funhouse, he was booed vociferously. Be supposed to be the babyface. What angle are they going for here, do you think?
I don't really know. I mean, this whole Rollins and Bray Wyatt feud is... I mean, we were just like, yes, WWE's going to do the right thing at Hell in a Cell. The Fiend's going to become champ and all will be well in the world again. And the slate will be wiped clean. You know, all sins forgiven. And then they did what they did at Hell in a Cell, and now we're kind of expecting the worst at Crown Jewel. And this is sort of just another part of this bizarre sort of story of, what does all this mean? Where's it going? What is the point of it? I mean, especially since the Firefly Funhouse, according to the announcers on Raw this week, Bray Wyatt's been feverishly rebuilding it. Apparently, you know, that's what he's been up to right now. He's probably got the hammer and nails out, probably got his roller out, you know, probably got the sandpaper. If you need some tips, Bray, don't ask me. Don't ask me for any DIY tips. Every job I take on takes me five times longer than a normal person. So but Bray's there. He's rebuilding the funhouse. So we're going to see it again this Friday on SmackDown.
Yeah, so hopefully they've... I mean... maybe the thing with Bray is that, I mean, somebody did mention as a, you know, alternative theory that maybe Wyatt beats Rollins at Crown Jewel and then Kane Velasquez beats Lesnar, and that's a way to get the WWE title onto SmackDown and the Universal title onto Raw.
I don't know. After that response to Kane Velasquez on was it Raw last night?
Raw last night, yeah, when he attacked Shelton Benjamin. Was it just me? I was so uninspired by his offense.
Oh, I mean, I'm sorry about that, but I've watched so much wrestling over the last 48 hours. A lot of it has just sort of blended into one, yeah. I mean, yeah, just another couple of things from Raw before I get to the Kane versus the Kane running on Shelton Benjamin. Andrade versus Sin Cara. That match lasted nearly 9 minutes. Why? Why did that match last nearly 9 minutes? And why did Zelina Vega have to interfere just before the finish behind the referee's back to soften Sin Cara up for the Hammerlock DDT? If there's anyone on that roster who's expendable, it's Sin Cara. I was bewildered by that. 9 minutes. We didn't need 9 minutes. That should have been a 90-second match.
Yeah, it just made Andrade look bad that it took him 9 minutes to beat Sin Cara, who's essentially a jobber.
Exactly. And I was just astounded by that. I mean, you know, Viking Raiders as well. I mean, what a shame for them. They're champs at last. They put them in there with Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins, who, you know, are flatter than an ironing board. And really not much atmosphere for that match. But I guess, you know, Viking Raiders are supposed to be babyfaces. Ryder and Hawkins, I believe, are still babyfaces. So that was a strange arrangement as well. Why would you put a Viking Raiders in with two guys who are not super over, but people sort of do respect them because they've been there so long? So that was not a good match for the Viking Raiders either. And I thought their title victory, which was the previous week, wasn't it, over Dolph and Robert Roode, I thought that was a really good match. I mean, I really enjoyed that match. And a big part of the reason why I enjoyed that match, Kenny, was because the Viking Raiders sold in that match. And it was like, this is why selling is so important to matches. You've got the Viking Raiders who have been presented as this sort of unstoppable force, but then we actually see them selling and fans are like, wow, you know, these guys can be hurt. I mean, will they win? And fans really got into that match. So I enjoyed the match in which the Raiders won the title. But yeah, what a follow-up. Really disappointing. Sorry, let's get back to Kane Velasquez and Rey Mysterio and Shelton Benjamin. Yeah.
So I'd heard a lot of things about Velasquez. Velasquez has had a couple of matches in AAA, and apparently he's really good. So I was like, well, this is going to be great. I'm looking forward to seeing him get in there. And then, I mean, you could tell he was trying to like do punches in a way that were not real, which obviously is good. But it just came across as a bit, I was just underwhelmed.
Well, I was absolutely underwhelmed as well. I mean, this was his big moment, wasn't it? Kane was coming out to save Rey Mysterio. And obviously they really value this guy because, I mean, they're allowing him to use the Kane name. I mean, how many WWE wrestlers, how many would anyone who's a WWE wrestler from the Performance Center or from Impact or from AEW, from any other promotion, be allowed to come in and use the name Kane, Kenny?
Not a chance.
So Kane comes in to save Rey Mysterio from Shelton Benjamin, who's bullying Rey, he's still got his arm in a sling. And it should have been a Goldberg moment. And I don't mean Goldberg in Saudi Arabia. I mean Goldberg in 1997, 1998. He should have grabbed him and bounced him around and slammed him about. And instead he hit these punches, which didn't really look that good. Then put like a sleeper type choke on. It was just naff, wasn't it? It was just like just a total flop, really. I mean, this should have been a moment for the ages where you look back and say, wow, you know, he really took Shelton Benjamin apart there, threw him into the ropes, smashed him about, hit high impact moves. And instead he didn't do any high impact moves. Again, that was a very strange thing to witness on Raw. And you've got all these people in this company who obviously know what they're doing, but then don't demonstrate it in the content that they produce. It's really strange, isn't it, Kenny?
It just didn't work. And I really thought that, because when Velasquez came out on the October 4 SmackDown, it was an electric kind of segment. You know, when he came out and it was like, oh, this is going to be great. And this did not fill me with confidence.
No, I mean, and Benjamin's, I mean, he's a robust guy. He can take it. You know, he can take the bumps. You know, I mean, Kane could have picked him up, done a couple of body slams, really hard slams. Shelton Benjamin could have sold him. He could have done like a clothesline. I don't know what. He could have done any sort of high impact moves. That's what we wanted to see from him. Because we know that that's what Brock Lesnar will do in their match at Crown Jewel. So it's, you know, fight fire with fire. And instead here, he was fighting fire with, you know, some marshmallows or something. I mean, it was pretty pathetic, actually.
It was not good. It was not good at all. We also got a very weird match when Humberto Carrillo took on Seth Rollins. When Humberto Carrillo seemed to be angry at Seth Rollins for burning down the Firefly Funhouse, which made him the biggest babyface of the night. And Seth Rollins then gave him a match. And, you could feel that this was kind of like a Heyman booking. You know, Heyman kind of wanted to give Carrillo the match against Rollins and stuff. So you sort of saw those fingerprints. And the match was decent, but, you know, Seth Rollins has just been a bit... recently, Seth Rollins has just felt like he's not connecting with people.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, a lot of it as well is the consistency is that, as we said, in the run-up to Hell in a Cell, he's a trembling wreck. Then at Hell in a Cell, you know, he's big and he's brave and he's courageous. And then afterwards, you know, there's no fear at all of Bray Wyatt, who, as we saw at the end of Hell in a Cell, is indestructible. And there's, you know, none of this is connecting. These are all lines that nothing's intersecting here. There's no story with point A, B, C, D, E. I mean, it's just all over the place. It's just a muddled mess. You know, I mean, why is Seth Rollins behaving like he is now? It makes about as much sense as the way he was behaving in the run-up to Hell in a Cell. You asked me before, you know, he burned down the Firefly Funhouse, so he's going there for revenge. But then apparently the Firefly Funhouse has been rebuilt, so it's going to be there on SmackDown. And the whole thing with the Firefly Funhouse, it's like this funhouse mirror, you know, looking at everything through a funhouse mirror, isn't it? Where whatever happens can then be undone the next week. You know, like with Rambling Rabbit, who we've seen die, and then he's just back the next week. And it doesn't really need to be explained because it's, you know, this alternative reality to WWE, kind of like, you know, the Matt Hardy compound, you know, back in 2016, where it's sort of like this satellite, isn't it? It's this external environment from Impact. So in many ways, things don't need to make sense. But it'll be, you know, it'd be interesting to see how Wyatt responds to the firehouse being burnt down. I mean, that's probably going to be the highlight of SmackDown on Friday. But you're right, going back to Seth Rollins here, he's kind of acting heelish. He's now got no fear at all of Bray Wyatt after previously being on the verge of a nervous breakdown. He's kind of acting heelish to Humberto Carrillo. They had a match. I really enjoyed the match, actually. I thought it was very well done. But right after Rollins had won the match, Jerry Lawler on commentary said that Rollins could have beaten Carrillo at any time. Whoa, well done, Jerry. We've just had this competitive match with this newcomer in his first Raw match going against the Universal Champion non-title match. He's apparently taken him to the limit. I mean, there was a couple of good near falls there from the moonsault, which looks magnificent. Majestic moonsault that Carrillo's got. And then you're telling us that Rollins could have beaten Carrillo at any time. I mean, what is the point of you?
What is the point of you? That's a t-shirt.
I mean, just get rid of that man from commentary now. Just fire him. You know, never mind getting rid of Eric Bischoff. Jerry Lawler should have been the first one to go. So, you know, so Rollins is there kind of acting heelish and was getting booed a little bit, but wasn't really healing it up properly in the match. Kind of was a little bit. Just a subtle heel. But then he shakes hands with Carrillo afterwards. So he's, you know, endorsing him. He's putting him over. You know, so it was really funny as well after Lawler said that on commentary because, you know, Vic and Dio just dived in there and tried to just clean up the mess that Lawler had just created. Kind of reminded me of Bobby Heenan's legendary blunder when Hogan's coming out at the end of Bash at the Beach 1996 and says, "But whose side is he on?" Oh, brilliant, Bobby. Fantastic. So, I mean, it was just strange, really. So I'm not sure what to make of Rollins right now. I mean, I think he is going to turn heel, but it doesn't look like it's imminent. We've got Bray Wyatt on SmackDown, so they're on separate brands, so no one thinks that the title's going to change hands unless, as you know, what your theory. I mean, I can't believe that they're going to put the belt on Kane, especially after that performance on Raw. That was just dismal. So, and I think, you know, people are not, I don't think fans are really on board with Kane at all in this match. I think they could well resent him. And this, if they were to give him the belt, I think that would be disastrous for him long term.
I'm just trying to think of anything in my mind that can give me the solace for the next, you know, 9 days that Bray Wyatt's not going to lose to Seth Rollins, which he inevitably is. And I blame you, Finn, because you sat here on your high horse and said, Kenny, I don't think there's anything to worry about because I think at Hell in a Cell they're going to do the right thing. And I believed you. I listened to you and your years of experience and you led me up the garden path and look where I am now. Say that Cain Velasquez should win the belt after a shitey performance just in the hope that Bray Wyatt can be the champion.
Yeah, I mean, that would just be like false economy, wouldn't it, times 10? I mean, that would just be like, well, apparently they've signed this guy up to a long-term deal from what I read. Is that correct?
They have, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not quite sure where he goes after Lesnar. I mean, it's possible that performance against Benjamin was just like an aberration and they'll be able to sort this out in the next time. Hopefully they will be able to. But yeah, I mean, if they put the title on him, I don't, you know, because he's just come in as an outsider. I don't think a lot of WWE fans even know who he is. It's not like Ronda Rousey when she came out Raw Rumble where everyone knew who she was. So, you know, with Kane, it's like if they put the title on him, I think that would be a major, major miscalculation and a huge setback for him. Yeah, it looks like Seth's returning at Crown Jewel, Kenny. But then I could be wrong because I'm trying to apply logic to these things. And that's often a dangerous course of action when you're covering pro wrestling.
It is indeed. what else is there to talk about that's been happening? I did want to ask you... In terms of we've got Full Gear coming up on November 9th for AEW.
Yes.
So the card that we have so far for Full Gear is we have the main event, which is obviously Cody versus Jericho in the main event. Jericho's now got his faction with Jake Hager, Sammy Guevara, and Santana and Ortiz. Moxley versus Omega. We're also going to have the Young Bucks against Santana and Ortiz. What do you make of the card so far? Have they done a good job from what you've seen? I know you might not have caught up with everything yet, but have they done a good job in building the top matches to Full Gear? And do you think this is a show that people are going to order in the same way that they ordered All Out or Double or Nothing?
One would hope that more people will order it because more people are now aware of All Elite Wrestling than they were before it premiered on TV on October 2nd. So if their pay-per-view numbers decline, that is seriously bad news. It really is. And you would think with Cody, who some are saying is the biggest star they've got, he's the figurehead, the face of the company, with him pursuing the title, you would think that this is going to be, it should be their biggest number of the year on paper. As far as the show goes, certainly one match on there that I'm really perplexed by. Now, I believe the final of the tag team title tournament is going to take place on the pay-per-view. I think that's right, isn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, the semi-finals are going to be... No, it's not. The semi-finals take place on tomorrow's episode, which is Dark Order against SCU and the Lucha Brothers against Private Party.
Yeah.
And the finals are on the November 2nd episode.
Oh, right, okay. So one wonders why they aren't doing the title tournament final on the pay-per-view. Really, I don't get that at all.
I guess, because I think that apparently I read somewhere about they were trying to have something for every show that they announced.
Yeah.
Like when they were putting the initial tickets on sale. So for the first 4 weeks, there was like, you had a hook. So like the first week you were going to get to see the women's title, you know, be awarded, and then you're going to get to see Jericho defend the title for the first time, and now you're going to get to see the tag champions crowned. So I think the idea was that there's something there every week for that first month that you can, you know, would make you want to buy a ticket.
All right, okay. So we've got a tag team match between the Young Bucks, who went out in the first round, against Santana and Ortiz. Now, was Santana and Ortiz in the tournament, Kenny?
No, I don't think they were.
I'm a bit perplexed by that as well. since they're one of the best teams they've got. I mean, I guess this was announced before they arrived. Maybe that's the explanation.
It was, yeah. I mean, so the tournament is the first round was the Young Bucks and there was a first round and somebody got a bye. Who got a bye?
Was
the
it
the Dark Order? The Dark Order got a bye in the first round. And then SCU beat Best Friends last week, so it's SCU against the Dark Order. Lucha Brothers beat Jurassic Express, and then the Private Party beat the Young Bucks. So now we're down to Private Party against Lucha Brothers and SCU against the Dark Order. And sorry, the final is on the October 30th episode of Dynamite.
30th. Okay, all right. So maybe there'll be a title defense that will be added after the October 3rd episode. Sorry, October 30th episode. Maybe that'll be announced on that episode. So there will be a title defense on the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, to me, that's going to be overshadowed by the Young Bucks versus Santana and Ortiz, which is a bigger tag match. So the fact that that's not for the title, again, we talked the week before about Young Bucks going out in the first round of the tournament, and that to me didn't really make any sense because they should have been the ones vying to become first champions and probably putting over the other finalists to instantly make them bigger stars than they were before the match. Young Bucks versus Santana and Ortiz is a match that really should be taking place for the title. That first match should be taking place, but I guess they've set things up, so that's really got to happen at the pay-per-view. I mean, I think Moxley and Omega, I think we've probably already seen too much of those two. Although I will say that I thought the tag team match on the October 16th episode of John Moxley and Pac versus Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, that was Omega's best performance in AEW so far. And he really looked like a star again. He really looked like this guy who could confidently say, yes, I'm one of the best wrestlers or the best wrestler in the world again. So I thought that was a really good night for Kenny Omega, who to me had never really looked like he did in New Japan in AEW until this match. So I thought that went down well. They haven't really done that much really with Cody versus Jericho, but I mean, they've still got two more episodes to do that. So I'm not really that enthralled by that match, but we've still got two more episodes, so they can build that one up. They can certainly make that far more inspiring to me than I currently think it is. I mean, the tag team tournament, because to me the big stars are not in it, like Young Bucks and Santana and Ortiz, to me are the best. Well, Santana and Ortiz certainly the best team in AEW. The Young Bucks are stars, or at least people who, you know, huge fans of this promotion think they are. I'm not really massively sold on the Young Bucks, as people know. But, I mean, that's still a match that people are going to enjoy. So I kind of feel like it's somehow disappointing that those two teams aren't vying for the title. So, yeah, there's some good matches on it, and I think it will be a good show. But it doesn't feel like, you know, it doesn't feel like a big Royal Rumble or a big SummerSlam or a big WrestleMania or when WWE gets it right. It doesn't feel anything like that in terms of as exciting to me as a well-promoted WWE show. But I mean, it can still be a really good show, and they've still got two episodes left. So, I mean, I think it would be wrong of me to not give them the chance to build this into the show that it can be. And I think that will be really interesting as well, because for so long, Kenny, you and I have talked about how WWF, as it was at the time, used to do a really good job of writing its storylines so they peaked on the episodes of Raw and SmackDown the week before the pay-per-view. That was something WWF didn't do it well every time, but it did do it well a lot of times. And it's not something that they really bother with anymore now they're in the network era. So I think it'd be interesting to see if AEW can do that, if they can really write the stories and get the feuds all arranged so it all really peaks the Wednesday before the pay-per-view. So I think that's going to be a big test for them. But I mean, I'm hoping they're going to pull it off. What do you think, Kenny?
I think they've done a decent job. I think the Jericho faction things worked pretty well. I think they've done a really good job. They did a video on the October 16th episode of Dynamite with Cody that I thought was excellent, really well done. So I think that is a good main event. I don't think Cody's going to win the title, but I think that you can see that right now their focus is more on the TV than it is on the pay-per-view. But yeah. They've got 3 weeks left, and I'm hoping that by the time we get to October 30th, we're really sort of like clamoring to see the pay-per-view matches. So I think there's one more week where I understand it being a bit TV, but I'm hoping as of next week, we start getting that real sort of like push for the pay-per-view. So, but I did want to ask you one last thing, Finn, before we go, because we're going to talk a little bit about some of the Bound for Glory matches on Thursday. We have to watch Ken Shamrock and Moose. There's just no way around it. Because I'm very excited. But I did. New Japan Pro Wrestling announced yesterday or Saturday night that they are doing an American subsidiary. They announced the formation of an American subsidiary named the New Japan Pro Wrestling of America. And it was noted that it's going to be one of phase three of their international business plan. Step one was going to search for talent. Step two was running shows. So they are planning to do stuff in the US. They plan to have this is kind of like an NXT UK, but for New Japan. What do you make of the idea of it? And is this something that you think can be successful with the current landscape in the States?
I mean, they're entering a crowded market, aren't they? I mean, they really are.
Not half.
So, I mean, it's like what we were saying earlier. I mean, I suppose if you're keeping up with New Japan, as well as all this other stuff, then there'll be a lot of mainstream programs that you won't watch simply because you won't have time in your life. And in a way, you sort of think, well, maybe they should have done it last year when they still had access to the Bullet Club, or now All Elite, the Elite guys. That would have been the time to really do it if you look back. But at the same time, they didn't want to rush it. They didn't want to go into this until they were ready. So I totally respect them being cautious about that, because so many times in wrestling, people have done things before they're really ready to do them and they've failed. I mean, they've got the training facility. So, I mean, I think they've got, was it amazing? That's correct, isn't it? Is it Shibata's one of the trainers? They've got like a really good team of trainers there. You know, everything they're going to do is going to be in terms of training and things like that. It's going to be top of the line. It's going to be, it's going to be probably better than WWE. It's going to be really good. So it seems to me like they've set it up well in a sense, in that they've taken the time with this and they haven't done this prematurely or before they're ready or whatever. So on one hand, that's really good. But on the other hand, there's so much going on right now. Is there really going to be a demand or an appetite for any more live wrestling in the States? Maybe there will be. Maybe New Japan thinks that everything that's going on right now is going to lead to another boom, which I'm sure is what AEW and WWE are hoping for. We have no idea at this point if it's going to lead to that, because that's something that may take time to really attract a new generation of fans to this pro wrestling, with new characters and things like that. So I don't know, really, Kenny. It's tough to say.
The idea of more wrestling.
In some ways, maybe it's going to be a good thing for the talent, because there's going to be people out there that are not signed to AEW and not signed to Impact and not signed to WWE who will be recruited to wrestle on New Japan shows in the States. So it's going to be really good for them. And this could be a thing that creates some new stars. We've been talking earlier in this podcast about how WWE has not been as diligent as it should have been about, turning out more stars and really getting behind people and going the distance with them. So maybe that's going to be a good thing in terms of creating some new stars, because if they're involved in New Japan, they're going to be trained well, they're going to be working with really good performers, and they're going to improve really quickly, far quicker than they would on indie shows. So I think overall it's a good move, certainly for the health of the business, 1 year, 2 years, or maybe 3 years from now. I think really got to look at this as a long-term investment in pro wrestling. And I think people could really, or the business could really reap the rewards of this in years to come. But as far as New Japan making this work financially, I think that could be tricky, because there's so much going on, as we've mentioned at least once during this podcast.
There is a lot going on, but we'll be here to cover it as it all breaks down. We're going to put a poll out on Facebook, I think, to just like list a bunch of other promotions, and you guys can decide what you want us to cover soon. You know, I know we're going to be doing Impact this week, but like, you know, in November, what would you like us to check out? MLW, New Japan, ROH, NWA. We'll leave it up to you, and our fate will be in your hands. But Finn, before we go, what are your plugs? How can people get in touch with you? If they wanted to buy one of your lovely ebooks, where can they go?
Well, people already know it's finleymartin.co.uk. My Twitter's at finleymartin. My Facebook's at finleymartin. I'm going to be putting some pictures of myself from Norway on there later in the week, so you'll be able to marvel at those. So, where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me, as always, at @inside_theropes or KennyMC1985 on Twitter. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where you can get this podcast 24 hours early and an overrun, which we'll be recording on Thursday, where you get bonus content from us. Finn will have up in a couple of weeks the Bret Hart interview, which is going to be a mammoth, like, 4 or 5 pager. So that's going to be coming up soon. Sondra and I do loads of bonus content, retro Inside the Ropes. I know we've promised that we're going to keep getting Finn in for these retro pay-per-views, but he keeps going on holiday, so we are going to tie him down to Survivor Series 1999. And we're going to talk about that show, because Sondra has no idea what's coming at Survivor Series 1999. God help her.
Listen, I'm not going away again, probably until April.
Okay. So we
have me around.
We have you. We'll be doing that. Bonus podcast, bonus articles, all that good stuff. Also, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content with Bret Hart, live streams Ollie and I will be doing every Wednesday. And also tickets, insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets. You can get tickets to come see Kenny Omega with us in Glasgow and London in April. Meet and greet tickets and general admission are available. And finish the year off with us in style in Cardiff and Glasgow, as we are bringing back Mick Foley for the nice day tour, where he'll be telling some stories from his New York Times best-selling book. I'll be interviewing him, and it'll be a Q&A. So there's lots going on. Check it out if you feel so inclined. So, Finn, I hope you enjoy maybe having a day to like not have to watch loads of wrestling before you get back on it again.
Oh, there is no escape.
No escape.
There is no escape. No, and you know, we love it. I hope people don't think I was complaining before. Absolutely, I'm not. So, I'll be looking forward to watching. We've got Bound for Glory to watch. I've got some NXT to catch up on. Obviously, AEW. And, the cycle never ends. You know what, Kenny? That's a good thing.
It is. There's loads for us to watch, and we will be here to cover it. So thanks for listening. We'll be back with the main podcast next Tuesday over on Patreon, Wednesday here on the main feed. And Sondra and I will be back on Friday to cover AEW and NXT week 4. So all that and more, Patreon for bonus stuff. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.